This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Property Show in the Morning Run. It's our weekly take on all things property related. I'm Sim Wee Boon. Today we have Janet Pillai, author of the book Cultural Mapping, A Guide to Understanding Place, Community and Continuity, which came out about a month plus ago. As the title suggests, the book is about cultural mapping, a relatively new field. So Janet, could you perhaps provide us with a brief overview of what exactly is cultural mapping?
Yeah, it is a very new field, although it has been practiced quite widely in countries like Canada and Australia, and now more frequently in other countries. Actually, it's a kind of a crucial step conducted before planning or intervention into a place. I would describe it as a very systematic approach to recording and presenting information about a place, but the difference is that it provides very integrated data about the place from the social, physical, and economic perspective. About the process, it involves sort of like identifying the assets and resources of a place, both the tangible as well as the intangible resources and assets. And it also kind of identifies the cultural systems and values that dictate the working of a place, which is often ignored in regular planning. So it might study, say, the ecology of the place and how or what is the interdependence between people, place, and use, and the role that culture or, you know, the inherited culture plays in that ecology. The reason why it's becoming popular is because it kind of complements and expands the idea of traditional urban planning. The traditional urban planning survey, which is quite technical. So this is kind of more interdisciplinary. It involves not just planners or architects or engineers, but also anthropologists, sociologists, you know, the soft sciences. And the other difference between, you know, traditional urban planning and cultural mapping is that it's more inclusive. It kind of encourages participation and partnership with the community living in that space, as well as stakeholders, because they are recognized as having quite deep knowledge or experience of the place. Yes, you know, in terms of outputs, we could say that cultural mapping is able to provide a picture of the cultural character and the significance, as well as the workings of a place. But the outputs don't just include maps. They are also statistical, narrative, visual, and oral. So they can actually take in quite a lot of information, which is not just in the form of stats and drawings, but, you know, also very sensual type of information.
From what you've just described, cultural mapping, is it more applicable for a preservation of a of something, or does it, is it more useful for a planning for another development model? Because the description of getting the records, the historical records, and the description of, you know, understanding the ecology and everything, I see its benefit in preservation, but also I feel like there is also the benefit that for future planning. But I just want to know, in terms of this concept, does it favor one or the other?
I think both. People who work in preservation tend to use it more than people who are involved in new development. And there's a reason for that, because I think when you use it in conservation, you are actually looking back at the cultural, you know, the inherited cultural knowledge and how useful it is in conservation. So it's used by, say, heritage groups to conserve sites, by indigenous groups to safeguard assets or cultural rights, and to appraise and manage cultural resources. But in countries like Japan and, say, Nordic countries, even in Singapore, Municipalities use it to guide, more local kind of development or development in local regions for risk management, for participatory policy making, to kind of conserve the diversity of the place, but also if they can afford to actually mitigate severe forms of urban development. But that depends who is in power and what the intention of development is.
Let's talk a bit about the process of cultural mapping. Maybe you can just briefly explain the steps on how a proper cultural mapping is fully implemented.
So normally the process involves a client who would come forward. So it could be a community, it could be a municipality, it could be a site owner. And we put together a team of people, both with hard skills as well as with soft skills. And very often there's a community connector, a person who's totally in charge of also communicating and getting local partners, meaning inhabitants or stakeholders, on board for the mapping. And then we frame the mapping exercise according to the objectives determined by the client. But it's really tough because the mapping team has to remain quite neutral when doing this kind of mapping and assessment. That means because they have two parties whom they're working for. One is the community and the stakeholders on the ground, and one is the client who has invited them. So if it's for a development project, or even if it's to support the community to safeguard their assets, still the mapping team has to remain quite neutral. And this is really a tough thing, in these times where parties tend to be very aggressive. I mean, the hiring party tends to be very aggressive. But nevertheless, once the framework is drawn up as to what to map, then specific tools are suggested by the experts. The tools have to be conducive to both technical type mapping as well as mapping tools that are friendly to the community because they are not technical experts. So two levels of mapping are going on. And basically, the data collected from this mapping is then analyzed, and assessment is made of the site, and post-assessment recommendations are made to the client. And the recommendations as well as the data is also presented to the community simultaneously, including the recommendations, so that they are constantly in the know of what is happening. So if the client is a interesting client who has their values or has the community interest at heart, then sometimes they may go on to participatory planning. That means they allow the community to be included in the planning process, or at least to be constantly in the know so that the designs can be shared, with the community. So we have had clients who actually have allowed this but more on an experimental basis. So it's quite a long process. It's anything between, 2 to 6 months. If it's a big site, it might take a year.
And it sounds expensive as well. I think the amount of research and the amount of people you need to get on board. Yeah. What's in it for the community and what's in it for me, the developer, who still wants to make money, but now I want to employ cultural mapping? What is the benefit?
First, I'd like to rid the notion that cultural mapping is expensive, because it's not. Because most developers would even governments or municipalities, if they own the land, they would give the survey to a consultancy company that normally does planning surveys. So actually, it's up to planning consultancies to take on the soft experts. And because the system of sustainable, or the concept of sustainable planning, is not adhered to in developing countries or even developed countries like Malaysia, we don't have the political will to actually demand sustainable planning or to incentivize sustainable planning. And that's the reason why these consultancies or consultant companies who do these surveys actually, or even government planners who actually have their own surveyors, do not hire the soft people into their employment. And if they do employ them, I think then there will be a very good balance in the kind of output coming out of these surveys. So I from my experience, it has never cost more. And actually, when we trained, I have trained state planners before, and they have also complained that cultural mapping and sustainable development and even the employment of suitable people is not in the toes of the planning departments. So that's where the problem begins. Now, this problem is extended into university training because unless the demand is there for sustainable development, then universities won't find the need to supply people from the soft side into these planning consultancies. As to what the community can gain or what a developer could gain from taking on cultural mapping really depends on his intention and the intention of the client. As I said, you know, there are countries like Japan, Sweden, Nordic countries, Singapore, that has already started the process of putting in cultural mapping for certain types of projects. And we are talking about more medium scale projects at a local level, not the big industrial projects. And the reason they do this is because communities really matter to them after some time, especially for very developed countries which are losing their populations. That means there's a drop in population, and they find it very difficult to keep, either they have over-urbanization, people are moving too much to the cities, they want to keep them in smaller towns. So they would like to see a better environment in the smaller towns. Also, over-urbanization, they're kind of worried about that, and they want to either improve urban centers or they want to dissipate, you know, and stop the movement from the suburban or the smaller regional places to the town. So it's most often used actually for regional planning, which is slightly outside of the city or in smaller towns, trying to move people the other way. That means moving people from cities to live in smaller towns. So the types of developers who take on those kind of projects, they are interested in cultural mapping, and they are also very interested in their zero conflict with the, how do you say, the community. So, you know, I mean, I think the Kampung Bahru and the TTDI Green Lung are two examples of very protracted conflict. And some people are just willing to, you know, continue this conflict for 2 to 3 years without resolving it. It's because of their intentions, which are very questionable. So we can't really do anything about intentions, but it's better to use cultural mapping or experiment with it in places where people have the right intention and positive attitude. And I find young architects or young developers more pro cultural mapping as opposed to the older consultancies or older corporates or, you know, very hardy type urban state governments which really cannot change.
The old school people. The old schools. Okay, this brings me to my last question before we move on to a break. Then do you see cultural mapping as a sort of evolution of urban development planning, or are they both two different animals that can coexist with each other?
I don't know whether whether you want to see urban planning as something that is linear, because if we examine traditional planning and design culture in Asia, if we look at, you know, types of planning such as Vastu Shastra or Feng Shui, we see how the planning and design of buildings and cities and even the choice of materials was traditionally in harmony with the natural laws of the universe, with physical, temporal, and spatial features, with energy forces. So traditional planning and design combine philosophical belief systems concerning the cosmos with empirical knowledge of the natural landscape, climate, and also with inherited cultural knowledge of building materials and practices. So going back to this type of sustainable vernacular development is not necessarily a forward evolution, but maybe a cyclical thing. I think it's unavoidable because of the demand now for more sustainable development. And really, we should think of using our own Asian traditions to do that move forward.
We're going to take a short break right now and we'll come back after these messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're tuned in to The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon, and with me today is Janet Pillai, author of the book Cultural Mapping, A Guide to Understanding Place, Community and Continuity. It's pretty much a book, a guide, a how-to on cultural mapping, which is somewhat of a new concept. Earlier in the show, Janet's been telling us what exactly is cultural mapping, its uses, its processes. What we spoke about earlier kind of illustrates a bit of a concern for the modern planning model, how developments are being planned out. I mean, could you tell me a bit about these concerns, its limitations, and its relationship with the cultural dynamics?
I think the modern planning model actually began in the 1900s, and it started off as a kind of a humanistic solution to disorder that was caused by the Industrial Revolution, wars, and high levels of urbanization after the war. But over time, it has become just terribly mechanistic and technocratic and unable to solve very complex societal issues. So one criticism about modern planning is that I think it's the two-dimensional scaling down of real space into two-dimensional drawings for the convenience of planners so that they can take in larger areas at a glance. But this is really a very, it's a simplification of reality. And it fails to capture the normative components of place. On top of that, plans are often based on deduction rather than actual observation of the site. Secondly, I think, these types of plans, like structure plans, local plans, the zoning categories that are made based on deduction, tend to take a very functional and clear-cut view of space, as if there's no spillage or interaction between spaces. It also tends to overemphasize spatial logic and the physical environment, and kind of ignores the complexity and the dynamism and interdependence between human and environment and between different types of environment. I guess this could also be due to the evolution of planning, which has been controlled more and more by technocrats, engineers, architects, planners, etc. And also governments don't employ soft skilled people. Although there was protest to the modern planning model by people like this British planner called Patrick Geddes, who felt that he worked a lot in India, and he pushed for like regional planning models where a human settlement, he felt, should be seen as a cultural entity which is shaped by this interaction between human and natural environment. So I feel that cultural mapping kind of continues Geddes' ideas about regional planning, where by collecting cultural data, it helps us understand how communities actually operate in relation to specific environments. So there's more respect for different types of environments rather than the industrial version of, a high-rise building no matter where and no matter who. I think we need to kind of appreciate cultural knowledge and practices and also appreciate the ecology of the place. And cultural mapping, enables this and gives that pre-step to modern planning model. So it like it like expands on the model, on the modern planning model, or widens it a bit further.
How do citizens and our culture and everything play a role in this planning and development?
Yeah, I think there are many citizens actually out there now, especially millennials, who are very aware of the need for sustainable living. But unfortunately, because of the long takeover by the state and by the private sector, private sector has practically infiltrated our lives and actually provides us a lot of services for money, in exchange for money. So citizens have actually lost agency to initiate change on their own. Also, we find that, you know, people have lost touch with placemaking. The placemaking is left to municipalities or to urban developers. So when you lose touch with placemaking yourself as an inhabitant, you lose agency and you just allow, you know, other people to carry it out, you know, for profit or whatever. So the state and the private sector have taken away citizen agency. So we need to change, maybe allow placemaking to have more participation from the local residents, and also maybe new approaches to sustainable planning and sustainable design. Maybe I can give you some examples. Like in Nordic countries, consultancy firms or survey firms or even developers employ not just architects and engineers, but they add on sociologists and cultural workers whose job is to engage the citizens in participatory planning and design. In Japan, interestingly, in regional planning or conservation or even redevelopment of old apartments in Osaka or in Tokyo, citizen inclusion is a must, a requirement. And sometimes you need as high as 80% of citizen resident participation before decision-making is approved by the planning authority. So these are sort of like things that you can put in, you know, into the system. Some municipalities in Japan experiment with hiring intermediaries who set up office on-site, not in the municipal office, on-site, meaning among citizens. And these people facilitate citizens to map and manage their own community assets, to put in input when there's a new development, to collaborate with the municipality on citizen-led events. Sweden has a kind of provides incentives for something very interesting called for private developers, which includes it's an incentive for private developers to include sustainable initiatives into their new development. Initiatives such as greening, urban farming, car sharing, water and waste management. And developers are encouraged to, they're given easier permits if they facilitate the residents to manage these sustainable initiatives within their new development. You know, similarly, as I said before, Canada and Australia take cultural mapping quite seriously, and they use it as a automatically as a first step in identifying and safeguarding the local assets, yeah, in the place. Yeah, so those are examples of how it can be incorporated slowly into the system, because I don't think it's possible to overturn the current system.
I'm just curious, you know, culture is not stagnant. It's ever changing and ever growing. Cultural mapping sounds like there's a lot of emphasis placed on past histories and, you know, a lot of things on, you know, you have to look back before you look forward. Has there any thought been given or any process been given where it also helps to ensure that what might change in the future will still make sense? Or does that mean that when those times come, a different method has to be employed?
I think people need to understand that culture is not just legacy. Culture is actually also a kind of process of change. That means it's called the adaptive nature of culture, right? I mean, if our culture doesn't allow us to adapt, we will be frozen. So culture is both process and product. So I think it's very important to understand why and how culture allows this adaptation to take place. That's why, while we in Malaysia don't see things like urban greening or, you know, carpooling, etc., taking place, actually in very developed countries, this is nothing. You know, all new developments automatically include these kind of sustainable initiatives into the new development. And the reason they're able to do it is because planning is a culture. And planning itself needs to change and say sustainable development is a must. I think people have moved ahead, but not planners, not planning culture. That means people are changing faster than planning culture is.
And perhaps the intent in development here also has not really changed. Love. I want to end on your book now. I want to ask, what is the intention and what is the point that you're seeking to illustrate with the book?
I think the new version of the book, I really argue for more participatory and a comprehensive approach to local planning and development. Actually, I put a very long critical chapter on planning culture, the modern planning culture, and I was asked to kind of go easy on it. But I really believe that cultural mapping can be integrated as a critical step before planning so that it doesn't disrupt the whole planning process but changes the perspective, you know, on planning. The book also, of course, provides, it's a manual, so it provides details on how to prepare for a cultural mapping exercise and how to conduct it, as well as the techniques and tools required. But I'm hoping that in Malaysia, it will interest planning professionals, architects, designers, policymakers, and even community activists and citizen groups, which is why in this version, I have requested practitioners from the region to provide case examples. So we have some case examples of experiments in Malaysia and Hong Kong, which describe the use of cultural mapping as an experiment, in different planning situations, different types of planning situations, either buildings or parks or, you know, back lanes or something like that. And yeah, I think we need to give incentives for these experiments, and maybe the book would be helpful for people to start on these small experiments.
Okay, before we end, tell us, Janet, how can our listeners get a copy of your book if they want to know more?
Yeah, you can get it at any major bookshop, or if you want it fast, you can drop by at Gerak Budaya in PJ. And the price is about 40 ringgit. And you can get an online purchase as well from Gerak Budaya online bookstore.
And that was Janet Pillai, author of the book Cultural Mapping, A Guide to Understanding Place, Community and Continuity. We have the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise. Stay tuned, PFM 89.9.
The Property Show on PFM 89.9, the business station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.